This is Down to Brass Tacks, the People's Parliament Edition. Today we are looking at corruption in Barbados. We are joined on the telephone line by Attorney General Adriel Brathwaite. Don't forget, I spent a long time in news calling Dale Marshall, the Attorney General, so that will happen from time to time. But Adriel Brathwaite, you know, we've been talking here about the promises made, the promises that haven't been kept. And we're trying to live within the realm of real politics, you know? So if you come to us in 2008 and you say there's going to be a need to bring legislation to prevent corruption, to improve the landscape for transparency, freedom of information, you actually go the distance, you draft legislation, and then nothing happens. People become disenchanted and skeptical about you as politicians. And when they look back over the years at all that has happened, that particular perception is cast on perhaps all politicians in the country. Give us an insight, Minister Brathwaite, Attorney General Brathwaite, as to what are the political and other factors that would create this kind of environment where you promise so much and deliver so little in this regard?
Well, David, we actually had drafted Freedom of Information, a Freedom of Information Bill. As you know, we did take the anti-corruption, the modernized anti-corruption legislation to Parliament in, I think, 2013. Because we always had a corruption bill in place. But as you may recall, at the same time, we were actually in the process of looking at our expenditure. And in terms of what I thought was most important to the country at the time, setting up new departments, and in particular new departments dealing with corruption, at a time when corruption in Barbados, as you may recall, only became an issue within the last couple of months because of politics. If you look at Transparency International in terms of the corruption in Barbados, at least the perception of corruption in Barbados, it is really not a significant issue. And I felt, and I'll accept responsibility for this, and I felt that given the cost in terms of establishing an anti-corruption commission, given the cost in terms of establishing a commission and having bodies in place to make it effective, and if we were to spend money in that regard as opposed to spend money elsewhere, I felt that it wasn't really merited given the level of corruption, or at least perceived corruption in the country. If I'm correct, and I think memory serves me correctly, last year we actually had a higher rating than we've had for quite some time, but we've made it into a political issue. Along with that is the fact that we were having this meeting in, I think, the 14th of April this year, dealing with corruption in the Americas. And I felt that Barbados couldn't attend the meeting in Peru without having ratified the UN Convention Against Corruption and the Inter-American Convention Against Corruption. And therefore, in December, I took to Cabinet a paper to establish the Anti-Corruption Commission. I also felt that I would need some time to work out how do we configure the body in terms of staffing, and therefore Cabinet agreed that we would actually proclaim the legislation on the 15th of June. Because if you know the government processes, we're going to have to find accommodation, we're going to probably have to establish a few posts, and therefore I felt it would take us probably about 6 months to have it in place. And that's all there was to it, you know.
Okay.
I made a decision based primarily on finances.
So was your unilateral decision? You basically canvassed very few people other than making reference to the Transparency International report. That's correct?
Well, I didn't, you know, David, I didn't think that we had to canvass the population in terms of whether or not it was a national priority.
Okay.
As I said, this is against the background of government cutting back on finances.
Well, how would you respond, therefore, Attorney General, to this perception that in these circumstances there are those who would say what you have advanced is fair and reasonable, but the other side of that coin is that you create an environment in which it appears as though the horse could get out of the stable, and after the horse has been out of the stable for the past 10 years, you now play that you are trying to close the stable door. Once you are in a position where people have been able to do as they please, put it that way.
Well, let me respond as follows, David. If you speak to the former commissioner of police, if you speak to the present commissioner of police, under my stewardship as attorney general, my position with respect to corruption has been very, very simple, which is, commissioner, if you detect any form of corruption among any public officers or among any of my colleagues, you will never hear me say, do not proceed.
No, but that's not the issue. Right? The issue is the structure that is in place, because this discussion so far today has spoken about weaknesses within the system, systemic weaknesses that make it very difficult to put your finger on these things. But, you know, since you raised Transparency International, this is a very important point, because you've used that as the basis for your conclusion. The question is, among other people here, to what extent does the Transparency International assessment of corruption in Barbados square with the perception on the ground? Mm-hmm. How do you all see that? Maria Phillips of the UPP?
Yes, that's a very important question, David. And that is something that I think, to be quite honest, I was a little shell-shocked by the Attorney General's response in terms of if your party came into power saying that it would implement the necessary legislation, then I believe it is something that should have done as a priority. 10 years later, you couldn't be saying that you didn't have the resources. Those resources should have been allocated from the beginning, because it was a promise that was given to the electorate. And the thing about it is that there is that perception, and I think to respond to and say that it is based on Transparency International is really to commit an error, a serious error, because the word on the ground is that all politicians are corrupt. And it is, if I allude earlier to the comments made, I believe it was by Ms. Howell, when she was talking about the necessity to change the culture, I think that that is something that has to be done as a priority in terms of creating now transparency within systems, so that the electorate can see that, okay, there are attempts being made to ensure that we are part of the process, or we can see where our taxpayers' money is being is going, and where it how it is being allocated, particularly so for big projects. And it is one thing that the United Progressive Party has set out in its governance manifesto in terms of ensuring that for big projects, you can actually go online. We can leverage technology to ensure that there's transparency. Everything does not necessarily have to become, or doesn't have to necessarily need an act. You can start with simple steps in order to ensure there is transparency within the system. But as Ms. Alice, as you would have indicated, yes, on the ground, the word out there is all politicians are corrupt. And it means that the persons coming into power now have to do a significant amount of work to ensure that there are steps taken from top down to ensure that that transparency can be felt by the Barbadian public at large.
David, and the reason why we speak of corruption all the time is because we politicians are the ones who point fingers continuously at each other.
You know that there is some element of truth in that, but I want to suggest to you, I mean, I've been around here a while, and I know the many people that you come into contact with who are giving or have given firsthand accounts of things that have happened to them, and that's not driven by their politics. It is amazing if you stay there and believe that it is only about the your political opponents coming out and trying to smear people. It is, from what I am seeing and hearing, it is not about that at all. Well, exclusively. But let's hear from Dale Marshall, as a politician who has to live with that perception as well.
Mr. Braffitt may not have to live with it much longer if we have our way.
The truth of the matter is that whether you are in government or in opposition, You have to deal with the perception. And there's a lot of skepticism.
And I think that the Attorney General is not being candid. To suggest that the issue of corruption is only a recent issue is absurd.
Because they campaigned on it. That's
exactly it. In 2000... Well,
I never said it's a recent issue.
Oh, well, perhaps I misheard. But it is clearly not your it has not been your government's priority until recently then. In 2008, they campaigned up and down this country on the issue of corruption. They said that it was so bad that they were going to enact anti-corruption legislation within 100 days. So they established this as one of their national priorities, and it was all tied in to bringing new governance to Barbados. Now, how is it possible for the Attorney General to tell us now, and I agree with you, Maria, in 2018, that it became an expediency issue? Government resources were scarce. This act went to Parliament in 2012. In 2012, when the Attorney General and the Minister of Finance and the Prime Minister spearheaded this bill in Parliament, none of them were saying it's a small thing. They were bringing it to the Parliament of Barbados because they felt it was a priority. Mm-hmm. It was a priority in 2008. It was a priority in 2012. But then all of a sudden, it has fallen off of their radar, has become expedient, leading a Prime Minister at the end of 2017 to say, what are we worried about? We still have anti-corruption legislation, never mind that it was passed in 1929. Even if you figured that in the context of government resources, the money, you know, you had to do a little something and you had to defer it. Let's ask this. What has it cost Barbados? What has it cost Barbados? Public, the perception of honesty and integrity in public life is more important to me and more important to Barbados and our national psyche than the $1 million that you worry about finding. So if expediency told you that, well, I'd rather spend money on buses, unfortunately, I haven't seen the buses. I haven't seen the clinic. I don't know what you spend it on. But what is the cost in allowing Barbados and Barbadians to feel that its leaders and its country is corrupt? For me, I would have rather you found the money to set up. I don't like your legislation, but I would have preferred you to find the money to set it up so that we could go forward with an opportunity to say to Barbadians that we are serious about corruption.
Okay, Mr. Brathwaite, what is your response to all of this?
My response to Mr. Marshall is that I stand by my position. If I had the choice between the biggest threat to this country, as far as I'm concerned right now, is protecting our financial system. If I had a choice between spending money in terms of bolstering our ability to respond to the OECD, the IMF, FATF, etc., and establishing an anti-corruption commission, I would spend the money protecting our financial services industry. And that's the point. In terms of national priorities, change depends on the circumstances. In 2008, it may have been a priority. But I'm saying to you that as time went by, in terms of how allocate resources, it changed. And for the record, seeing as we're speaking about political expediency, to my recollection, the only confirmed case of corruption, the only alleged case of corruption, is being filed in some court documents between Edmund Hickson and George Payne. But I will not bother about that today.
David, I'm sorry. Let's home in on this issue. I do not know that it is a choice between setting up a commission to deal with integrity in public life and protecting our financial services. If the Attorney General wants to tell us that that is how the government decided, it was either protect our financial regime or do that, fine. But I am well aware that there's been a vast amount of wastage in this country And when the money was being wasted by the Democratic Labour Party building a polytechnic in St. John for $39 million.
Let me come back.
Nobody was
Hold on, gentlemen. Because I want to keep us focused on what we are looking at here. This issue here now is, where exactly do you consider that we are right now? Do you genuinely believe, Attorney General Brathwaite, that Barbados does not have an issue, and therefore all the efforts that the government has made, signing on to international treaties and drafting legislation, paying the money associated with all of that, that essentially that was money wasted? Where do we go from here, having done all of this? And ultimately, since you seem to have had a lot of power in determining what should happen for the country as a whole, what is your perception of the magnitude of the problem in Barbados today?
David, I can tell you where we're going. The legislation will be proclaimed on the 15th of June. Therefore, everyone in public life will have to declare their assets, etc. That's where we are in the future.
I still have to get the answer to the question, which is, give us your perception, your perspective on how big the problem is, or if it is not big at all.
David, we don't live on Mars, and therefore, like all countries in the world, there must be some level of corruption. The level of corruption, however, I can only gauge in terms of reports that comes into to my office, and not based on innuendo, and not based on political comments that are biased, right? Corruption has become.
Has it remained static in the 10 years? Has it declined? Has it increased?
Well, it's difficult, David. It's difficult to gauge. What I will say is that over the last year and a half or so, because the Barbados Labour Party has determined that they're going to make it an issue in this general election, that you've been hearing lots of noises, and it's been contrived.
I asked you for your own assessment. I asked you with the BLP said. Based upon where you sit, would you say it has remained static?
There is no indication that corruption has increased in Barbados over the last couple of years.
Right.
Based on where I sit.
And against that background, therefore, the efforts which have been made could well be interpreted to have been really a waste of money. Agreed?
A waste of money in what regard?
Well, if the problem is not big, it is blown out of proportion, then it informs the fact that you've spent all of this money already, and it also has the potential to inform how much muscle you are going to put behind it in the future.
No, David. Because the legislation is quite clear in terms of the independence of the commission, mm-hmm. in terms of giving the commission the teeth. It makes no sense sending a commission and they don't have the teeth to interrogate the information that comes into it and prosecute persons.
Let me put this to you. When I listened to Sir David Simmons speak to the Integrity Group in October 2017, he said that he had...
Sir David Simmons, the impartial advisor to the Barbados Labour Party.
Well, I don't know if he's... the truth of the matter is, in this business, I have learned not to look at the messenger and to focus more on the message.
Yeah, but, so, but the messenger, in the context, really should disclose fully who
everybody knows who Sir David Simmons is. Anyhow, the prevention of corruption...
Everybody knows by now that the Barbados Labour Party to heart.
Okay.
You must understand the messenger.
Okay, fair enough. You have put that on the table. Reasonable. Prevention of Corruption Act 2012. He said, I am concerned that the act contains no part detailing the investigative powers of the commission's officers. We found it necessary in the TCI, which was in the Turks and Caicos Islands, to give our investigative officers the powers of a constable to arrest upon reasonable suspicion and to apply to a judge for a production order. These types of commissions cannot function effectively without investigative officers suitably empowered. It is one thing to give us the idea that you are setting up a mechanism, but if at the end of the day the mechanism is not properly structured to execute, then what you're doing is just giving us a sop. to what extent would you respond to that particular point about the weakness, this weakness in the legislation, which you are now saying is going to come to pass?
Well, I heard that, David, and you may recall that I actually said that we're going to review the legislation because I was also equally concerned about the fact that as a result of the legislation, many persons who now serve on boards have already indicated that they're no longer willing to serve on boards. So, in fact, we are in the process of reviewing the legislation. And I've taken
to strengthen it or to weaken it to accommodate those people.
Come on, David. What's the point of reviewing it if you're proclaiming it?
Come on, David. Why would you weaken the legislation?
So if you have had those complaints from people, what would be the purpose of the review? I'm not here to put the, look, I have to chase you in the context of what you put before me. If you say that people say they don't want to be on boards anymore because of this legislation, how then are you proposing to review it? To what effect?
But that's exactly the point, David. Let's use school boards as a good example. Let's use organizations who receive monies from government, but in fact the monies are still controlled within ministries. So a good example would be constituency councils, a good example of that. Basically, David, constituency councils, yes, the money goes to the councils, but the purse is controlled within the ministry. So the ability for council members to do things, you know, against the law is very, very limited because the funds are actually controlled from within the ministry. So, in other words, I've asked my team to look at controls to see how we can insulate more of these officers and more of these board members so that they will continue to be willing to serve. David, I will not serve on a board in this country if I wasn't a politician for $120 or whatever it is per meeting and have to disclose all of my life to the public. I wouldn't do it, not for $120.
But that only reflects on how community spirited you are.
No, but I'm telling you, Dave. No, David, it's my right to secrecy.
Precisely. All right, let me get some other reaction here. This is Solutions Barbados, Granville Phillips.
Yes, thank you. All right, having the Contractor General and the Freedom of Information Act and Integrity Legislation Act, these are useful things. But what they do, the Attorney General explained, this could be an expensive thing trying to set up all of this infrastructure. And basically you target everyone instead of focusing on the likely guilty persons. And that's very inefficient, expensive, and wasteful. Whereas our method is very efficient and very effective because it's the people on the ground who have concerns about corruption. And people know about it. I mean, the tellers know at the banks.
You mean the whistleblower legislation?
Yes, because the tellers at the banks know. The contractors that build their houses and apartments know. I mean, quite a few people know. So since they know, but they cannot say anything about it right now because of the Defamation Act, and there's no way for them to do anything.
So how do you know that your method is effective? Where has it been applied before?
Right, in the States, but that their method is, and other countries, but
it's exactly as you have it mapped out here.
Right, their method is that you only get like 5% or a small percentage because they're talking about billions of dollars, whereas with us that's talking about like millions, that's why we're giving them the entire value of the bribe.
Right, I want to come back to that, and from this angle. At the end of the day, we are dealing with public finances, people's money. What you are seeking as much as possible is to get as much of that money back so that it could go to the purposes for which it had been assigned. So if you go in the direction of giving too high a percentage of that to whistleblowers, then you are still cheating the taxpayer. That is one part of it. How do you see that?
Yes. The whistleblower gets the full value of the bribe, but after this 3-month amnesty is over, the person who gave or received the bribe must pay 10 times the value of the amount. So one time will go to the whistleblower, the 9 times goes to the government.
So how realistic is that if a man essentially does not have the assets to pay 10 times the amount?
The assets are there. Yes, the absolute. We're talking. Here we're talking about a contractor who's doing a $300 million job. A $300 million job. Barbados? Yes, he will have the assets. Pardon?
How many $300 million jobs are in Barbados?
Wasn't the HMP Dodds that Veko did about $300 million?
But how many?
300. Well, that's
David,
a lot.
David,
that's a lot.
If, yes. If I can interrupt.
And Veko, I must
the
say.
The public perception of corruption. While it may come in big projects, you know where it really comes? It comes in things like permits that people want. And what is perceived is that the only way you could get a permit to do something or another is if you pass a few dollars. You want a contract to dig wells? Pass a few dollars. Now, that is the kind of pervasive corruption. You want to get something out of a particular government department? You got to pay $500 here, maybe $1,000 there. Now, that is I'm not saying that there isn't big corruption, but I'm telling you that the people who would have been interviewed by Mr. Devenish weren't people with any vested interest in any $300 million projects. The government may do $200-$300 million projects over a 10-year period. But what happens is that the cost of doing your day-to-day business goes up. Yes. When you cannot get a taxi permit, when you cannot get something out of a little government department, and the perception is that anything that you want to do in Barbados now has to be associated with a bribe. And that is what we're talking about.
No. Attorney General.
Let's be serious.
And you said perception.
Attorney General, that aspect of it, at that level, would you say that has remained small?
Well, David, I really don't know. And you see, there's no evidence one way or the other. There's no evidence one way or the other. You hear these things by innuendo. Not one person. And in fact, David, let me use myself as an example. My life is actually, I say continuously, is an open book. Right? You've never heard my name, or you can never hear my name legitimately associated with corruption. And I have said that if you use my office as a moral barometer, therefore you can always feel free to come to the Office of Attorney General or report to Commissioner of Police any of these instances. Now, I was shocked and surprised by, I heard Mr. Devenish's report mentioned, that in fact that the perception is that the Royal Barbados Police Force is the most corrupt institution in the country. And I said publicly, and of course, you know, I posted something on Facebook with respect to it. Tell us the basis on which this was arrived at. What questions were asked? Which areas Mr. Devenish and his team went into and asked the questions, so we can get an idea and be able to interrogate his report. Strange enough also, David, this goes back to 2015. And it only appears to the national attention a couple of weeks before the general election. I find it very coincidental.
Chantel?
Yes, thanks, David. A couple of things. So, one, I think when we talk about the perceptions, so if we go back to the transparency index, which was used or referred to earlier, the transparency index is made up of a compendium of perceptions by experts, right? Who those experts are, whether they're from the international level or the regional level, we're not quite sure. So it's a compendium of perceptions by a group of experts, so that there is a qualification on that perception and what that index says to us there. So I just wanted to indicate that. I think, too, as well, when we talk about, making choices based on issues of economics, that, again, and if we were listening to the discussion by Christine Lagarde earlier, one of the big things that comes across to us is that corruption affects the cost of doing business. The statistics suggest that it actually increases it by 10%, and it actually decreases investment by 5%. So that if you are indeed interested in looking at the issues of economics and all of the factors that go into shoring up economic stability, then corruption would, of course, then have to be a significant factor in there. I think thirdly as well, when we talk about, you know, the fact that people are saying that they, you know, they're not going to want to sit on boards because they have to declare assets, and while I agree that is a critical concern, it means then that we have to try harder to create that cultural shift that Crystal talked about before, so that people understand the importance of the process, importance of imbuing confidence in our governance systems, and rather than see that as a deterrent, but that they then understand the importance of participating and participating effectively. So to me, that should provide greater impetus in order to ensure that our systems are going to be as strong as they should be as well. I also want to suggest, right, and because we talk about this thing about evidence quite a bit. Corruption doesn't exist because there's no evidence and no one has come across. And to me, it's a wrongdid argument. Why would I come and produce evidence if there's nothing in the system that suggests that I will be protected? If we exist in a system where we know that everything is politicized, that every comment and sometime action then comes on to be called partisan, if there's no effective whistleblowing legislation, if there's no effective integrity legislation that will provide protection for people who want to come forward, why then do we think that it is so startling that there's no evidence that people are not coming forward? The system does not provide the assurances that the ordinary man can say that I feel confident that when I come forward, that I will be listened to and that action will be taken. It's a wrong argument.
We come to the issue, Attorney General, of what happens if you misunderstand and misread the populist sentiment on this. What do you see as the worst that can happen if you've got it wrong?
Well, David, I can't change the past. What I can reiterate is a fact that the legislation will be proclaimed on the 15th of June this year. I can't change the past.
But when you first came, may I suggest to you that when you first came to the public in 2008, the Democratic Labour Party of that period considered that you needed a suite of legislation, mm-hmm. that not just one act would have been able to deal with it. And that's where issues of transparency and issues related to the defamation and freedom of information and things like that, they were all seen as part and parcel of the total package.
And urgent.
And the Prime Minister at the time actually set up a small committee that looked at all
work was issues. Done. Work was done.
And indeed, yes, and produced draft bills.
So what's happening with all of that? Now you take one piece out and tell us, okay, so we are working on it. But we know, and this discussion has said, that it requires a lot more than that. What's happened to the rest?
Well, let me clear up one point here, which is as follows. In terms of looking at integrity legislation, we looked at the integrity legislation. We actually looked also at the anti-corruption legislation. And decided that there was no need for two separate pieces of legislation. Okay? So if you look at the anti-corruption bill that we have, and if you look at integrity legislation in other parts of the region, you would actually see that most of it is actually covered in our anti-corruption bill. So there's actually no need, but in our opinion, to have two separate pieces of legislation. The other point that I want to make quickly is as follows. And I think this is in regard to comments by Mr. Phillips, that in many jurisdictions, and Jamaica is a good example, that has the contractor general, etc., the perception of corruption in those jurisdictions is greater than Barbados that does not have the legislation in place.
Don't you think, Attorney General, that it would have been a safer thing to do for the government of Barbados to get its own gauge of the perception of corruption in this country in trying to make decisions as to exactly what we should do rather than relying on... I never believe what Transparency International said based upon things that I'm hearing on the ground. Mm-hmm. And I don't know who represents Transparency International in Barbados. I don't know anybody who can tell me that they have ever been asked anything by Transparency International about corruption in this country. But more importantly, nobody knows where the office is. So against that backdrop, the last time I knew that somebody was representing Transparency International in Barbados, what I knew is that that person was a strong supporter of the Democratic Labour Party.
So what evidence do you have then, David, of an increased... in corruption in Barbados?
No, my perception is based upon the people that I come into contact with, the conversations that I have, the anecdotal evidence. And that's why I'm saying to you, it is better.
Anecdotal, you say?
Yes, and of course it is. And now strengthened to a large extent by the Devenish report.
David.
Okay? Exactly. The Devenish report from 2015. But however, my only point to you was that it might have been safer for the government to initiate some independent assessment of that, because so much rides on it. As I was suggesting to you earlier, what happens if you get it wrong? Then the whole sense of apathy and a sense of detachment and that sort of thing also rides on that. How do you respond?
But David, I have been consistent as Attorney General. And that's why I said to you, you can speak to the former Commissioner of Police, you can speak to the present Commissioner of Police. If there are any cases of corruption, if you perceive any case of corruption, feel free to investigate. I will not hinder any type of investigation. I've ensured that from my own perspective, at a personal level, that my name can never be called legitimately, and therefore they can go ahead and investigate anyone in this country.
Okay.
And I can put the Prime Minister in this regard.
If I can make a few comments. Now, the Attorney General said that that his cabinet is determined that the legislation would be proclaimed.
Just let me tell the public that after you make your comment, I'm going to open up the telephone lines, 434-1790, so that other people can participate in this discussion. Yes?
Yes, the Attorney General has said that the legislation will be proclaimed on the 15th of June. Well, that is fine as far as it goes. But he's also said that he has reviewed it and there are changes that have to be made. Now, so far as I recollect, we don't have a parliament that is able to change any legislation between now and the 15th of June. So it seems to me to be a bit of a fool's errand to proclaim a piece of legislation that you are now saying to the public today that there are defects, and in my view, significant defects. Equally, though, I'd like to remind the Attorney General that we debated the estimates not long ago. And there was absolutely no provision in the estimates of Barbados for the establishment of a commission. Now, we know that in order to make financial commitments, you have to make provision for it in the estimates. We have an election taking place in Barbados on the 24th of... We're having an election on the 24th of May. They want to proclaim legislation on the 15th of June, set up a commission, but no financial provision has been made for it in the estimates of expenditure for the year 2018-2019. So I really have to say that even the most distant layman finds very little that can give them any confidence that this administration is serious about the whole issue.
What's your response, Mr. Brathwaite?
My response is that my friend, Mr. Marshall, I say my friend, Mr. Marshall, because we are both attorneys at law. No trial.
You're implying that that's the only reason you call him your friend?
So, yes,
otherwise, he would have been your enemy.
it's a legal convention. We call colleagues friends.
That's why supplementaries are available. You know, because when I look in terms of what is required, we're probably going to have to initially move some officers across some other ministries as opposed to creating new positions. And that's why we're looking at other jurisdictions. I think we've looked at Trinidad, we've looked at the Bahamas, we've looked at Antigua in terms of how their commissions are presently structured so that we can get it right in terms of cost.
But the point they're making is that you don't have any elbow room between now and June 15th to do all this work? That's the point that he's making?
It's been ongoing since December. I took the paper to the case.
But then why was there no money in the estimates for it 2 months ago?
Or even from 2012 when it was passed.
How can you put
money in the estimates when you don't know what is required?
Right, so there's no provision for it right now.
If additional resources would be required, we just have to have a supplementary. We do it all the time.
But you would have to go to Parliament for a supplementary, wouldn't you? But then again, you make it retroactive. Look, the other point, though, I want you to expand on, you talked about defects. I think I heard you mention one defect. However, are there other defects? And if so, what are those defects?
within the ministry, a couple of officers who are looking at it. I heard you mention Sir David's comment, and of course, I'm willing to take on board comments by even the opposition if there's no desire.
Well, there are other things on that score. Let us identify some others. There is an absence of proper whistleblower protection in the Barbados Act. The provisions of Part 8, headed protection of witnesses, are altogether insufficient to encourage and protect whistleblowing. You agree with that?
No, this is a comment from whom, David?
Because your friend, Sir David Simmons, because you're lawyers together, too.
Okay, all right. Fair enough, I'll have to accept that. I really haven't looked at Sir David's comments in totality.
You haven't?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I must confess that.
All right. In that regard, let me leave you with this one.
But he's looked at, yeah. He knows the act. His ministry drafted it, and I wonder if the Attorney General could tell us if Part 8, and I'm looking at Part 8 now, if Part 8 has any, it is headed protection of witnesses, etc. But I agree with David Simmons. In fact, I'm not agreeing with him because he said so last year in a speech. I said this in Parliament in 2012 when the matter came up. It is one of the glaring defects. There's no serious protection here for whistleblowers at all. Mm-hmm. So why proclaim an act that doesn't have any investigative powers, and the section to deal with that is 27, why proclaim an act that doesn't have any protection for whistleblowers? I mean, why are you putting an act that you acknowledge is deficient before the country to serve what purpose? Just to be able to say that you're proclaiming it.
But yes. I don't understand your comments, you know, because...
I'll speak English next time.
Legislation changes from time to time. We review all kinds of legislation and amend it. There's no such thing as a perfect act.
Look, there's one...
But if it is imperfect now, it would behoove you to try to correct it.
You know,
and I've said that. I have said that.
You said you're correcting it. What is significant here is that, having been given the opportunity to identify what you may see as further defects, you say it is being examined. But here's another one. The Barbados legislation laconically states in Section 10, says David Simmons, that the Commission has the power to compel the production of statements and to enforce the attendance of witnesses. The Act should give the Commission the powers of a High Court judge to avoid a challenge in judicial review proceedings. Moreover, the form of summons should be set out in the Fifth Schedule. So he has identified what he sees as significant weaknesses in this legislation, which... quite frankly, as Attorney General, it is important that you be aware of that, because it is part and parcel of the feedback that is required from the community as a whole. So finally, he says, in my opinion, the Barbados Act is seriously deficient in several material particulars, many of which I have not set out. If it were implemented in its existing state, one would be able to drive a cart and 10 donkeys through it. So... That's the background to that. Now, you have another piece of legislation that was put before the House for first reading only, a procurement bill. Can you tell us what that particular bill is all about? Because we spent a lot of time in this country worried about procurement and how, especially as it relates to these PPPs or bold projects.
Well, in fact, David, if you look at the bill that's presently drafted, it will address many of the issues that you are so concerned about in terms of corruption. Because in terms of procurement, our systems will be significantly tightened, so that these innuendos or these suggestions that ministers are involved in terms of procurement processes, et cetera, as presently structured. Have a look at it.
Well, you know, we never said that. We haven't gone that far in our public pronouncements on this.
No, David,
I mean, if I had said that, I would run into trouble.
Say that.
Pardon?
I bet you Mr. Marshall can't say that he has not said it, he and his colleague.
I certainly have said it.
We said on the floor of Parliament.
If David were given the microphone, he would say no, because they are. It is interesting that you bring a procurement bill.
You don't surprise me.
I'm very happy to hear that, Adriel. It is interesting that you would bring a procurement bill, and you're saying to us that it will get rid of all of the headache and the accusations of tenders and so on.
No, he said he was assuaged to some of the concerns that I have raised.
Fine.
That's what he said.
But you know, it that comes against the background of a tremendous number of contracts given out by your administration, none of which have gone to tender. So, again, I worry about your sincerity because...
What tremendous number of contracts are you talking about?
Well, we're talking about the contracts in relation to the grotto. We're talking about the contracts in relation to the National Housing High-Rise Projects. We discussed them in the Public Accounts Committee.
But the Auditor General,
in his last report on the same issue, pointed out that the rules were breached because you did not tender. Mm-hmm. That the Auditor General said so.
In fact, part of the procurement bill is dealing with exactly those issues in terms of PPPs, et cetera. In an environment where government did not have a lot of money, we looked in terms of the public, in terms of partners who came to us and said, "You want to do housing? We are in a position to assist you in this regard." I believe the bill, as President Drafter would say, notwithstanding that X comes to you, and in fact that you also have to now go out to public and encourage at least two or three others, I don't remember what the bill is after it said, tenders, so that this perception that you're giving the business to just one entity or two entities will disappear. Again, because bear in mind, David and members of the panel, that PPPs were relatively new to Barbados. In fact, the only one that, if I remember correctly, that we can remember publicly was the one to do with the highway, with Trieste or whatever they're called. They're relatively new to us.
The prison was a PPP, the High Court was a PPP, the Coast Guard building was a PPP. PPP. We've done
quite
many
a number
of
them.
But and you went out to tender for all of them?
Yes, sir, we did.
I do not recall that, you know.
Well,
if you went up the center,
you can check the records in relation to the prison, given the emergency situation. Ads were
published. The only thing
published.
I remember with the prison is whether or not it was US dollars or Barbados dollars. I remember that.
Well, if you want to be flippant, fine. I don't know that you could seriously have built a modern prison for that amount of money in Barbadian currency.
But you know, you said that when it came to implementing earlier legislation, your concern was that it wasn't a priority because the money could have gone elsewhere. Would that also have applied to the introduction of procurement legislation earlier, so that you would avoid the possible perception that
David,
enriched a handful of people by virtue of the absence of a proper procurement policy, notwithstanding the fact that you are now about to close the door on that?
David, it is very simple. The research had to be done. Even at a CARICOM level, we then have to make some changes to our bill so that we can bring it in conformity with the draft CARICOM bill. We sent some public officers to be trained because we have to put the mechanism in place. I believe either the community college and or University of West Indies actually put on some courses in terms of procurement. And from a drafting perspective, we actually had to do some additional training to make sure that we get it right, and that's what took up the time. It wasn't from lack of will on the government's part.
Any other comments?
No, I think
Chantal Monroe Knight from the Integrity Group Barbados.
You know, it's interesting because we can get into a debate about what the Democrat Labour Party did incorrect and what the Barbados Labour Party did when, you know, when they were in power. But I think that the public is more interested in what are we going to do to strengthen the process going forward. And not to have a conversation that, you know, that we trade barbs on both sides, because then it kind of removes responsibility for doing something and for acting. So even as we've been saying before, we have the promise that the bill would be proclaimed in June, and you know, even that is kind of up in the air in terms of
it is
you know,
up
all
in
of these things.
And the cabinet has agreed to be proclaimed on the 15th of June.
Yeah, fair enough.
Okay.
Fair enough. I think, though, I think my larger point was, though, I mean, there are other assurances that the public needs to have, and I think that comes from the earlier conversation, that it's not just about enacting legislation, and not just about enacting one piece of legislation, but the full suite. So we are still, and I'm talking from a public perspective, still interested to understand what it will happen to the freedom of information legislation. As well, because that is also an important part of protecting and ensuring accountability for the public itself. We're interested to understand as well how we give teeth and resources to those systems and processes that are going to need to act together to ensure that the legislation is effectively enforced.
Okay, let's go to the telephone lines, 4341790. That's the number for you to call. To be part of this discussion here today, in which we are looking at corruption in Barbados. Bear in mind that our focus is not on pointing accusing fingers at anybody right now. What we are focused on is what are the strengths, what are the weaknesses, how can we make Barbados better in this regard, and what are the consequences if we do nothing? That's basically where we are going with it. If you look at a piece of legislation which has been proposed, have you had enough time to analyze what you think is useful, what part of it you think may not be as useful to Barbados as those who have shaped it may intend? And at the end of the day, how much faith do you have in the Barbados system, and what needs to be done to either give you faith or to restore it? This is Down to Brass Tacks, the People's Parliament edition. Welcome.
Good morning or afternoon?
It is still morning.
Okay, good morning.
11:52.
Okay, thank you very much. Questions quickly. You know, I thought the program would have been what they are going to do, because we don't know what happened already. But what are they going to put in place to rectify, to help, to stop whatever corruption that anybody seen fit that is happening or that could happen? But right now, I'm mostly hearing, like...
Listen, don't worry about what you're hearing. Focus on what you want to hear.
But that's why I just say what I want to hear. I don't
okay.
want to hear the attack.
So let me ask you to tell me, from where you sit, what you think needs to be done.
What I think needs to be done is something put in place, whether it be legislation-wise, or whatever y'all would do, because remember, y'all are the persons and the persons there who know they know how to do it. And they know all to know what to do. I would like to see that when certain things, as you all put, and everybody want to know when money is allocated to a particular area or to a particular thing to be done, it goes to that and do what it's supposed to do.
Okay. From where you sit right now, let's talk about how you see it as an individual out there in the community. Because, you know, the Attorney General spoke earlier about Transparency International and stuff like that. But from where you sit, how do you feel about Barbados in that regard right now? Do you feel comfortable or uncomfortable with it?
You want me to say to you, if I believe there's corruption going on and if you're uncomfortable about it, does you want me to say it?
You tell me what your experience is.
No experience. I can't give you an experience from what
Well,
you
the experience is the experience I'm talking about is that which you gather when you walk around Barbados, when you talk to people. What is the feel that you are getting?
I don't ever trust that now, because everybody tell us from everybody at this point in time.
Okay.
Everybody tell us.
So it isn't, in your judgment, it is not a bad scenario. It is we can live with it.
You see, so you can try to run me into that, but it's in a bad scenario. Don't do that here to me, man. I ain't that dumb. So don't try to make me say things that you guide me into. How
listen, I've given you a question. Listen, I've given you a question in such a way.
You're too smart. Listen,
I have given you a question in such a way that you can answer it either way.
Right. So when I say yes, it goes to say then that I say it's not a bad situation. That's what you want me to do. But anyway, listen, let me end off with this, right? This is what you would like. Stop the pot shots at one another and let everybody say what they can do.
All
so
right,
can
let's move on. Let's move on. Move on. You don't have anything else to add to this discussion. Let's move on. Down to brass tacks.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis. How are you this morning?
I'm okay. And you?
I'm fine. I don't want to speak too long. I just want to make an observation and then ask a question.
Mm-hmm.
I would have listened to the Attorney General when he spoke. And I am appalled at what he would have said when he was talking, when he was talking about the corruption and the legislation to deal with it. Because I was looking forward to when there came to government that issue would have been dealt with and things would have been put in place to make it a thing of the past. What I would have recognized, though, during their term in office, that we would have seen where the Auditor General would have made certain recommendations, as well as the Public Accounts Committee would have got their held their meetings, and they would have had the opportunity where they would have said that they wanted to speak to certain ministers of government. And the behavior of the government, which the Attorney General represents, made the average citizen in Barbados call both the Public Accounts Committee and the Auditor General to be seen as toothless lions. And I am saying that what I am disturbed about at this point in time is that there is a need that that this legislation be passed and it is done in such a way that there is no loopholes, neither a loophole like what we would have seen displayed by the present administration towards the legislation, towards the Public Accounts Committee, where they were going
Let me ask you this question. How does all of this impact on you personally? How do you feel about it?
I am saying it impact on me to assert the high level, because that is where you are seeing now that the average citizen and many Barbians, when you walk, they're losing confidence in politicians. And therefore, I am saying that what we need to do is to have something put in place now that the Auditor General, the Public Accounts Committee, be seen as lions with teeth. In other words, put teeth in the mouth, that when they decide that you, Mr. Ellis, is accountable for X, and the one you get there. If you decide that you ain't getting there, that something is there to deal with it and have it done so that it is transparent across the board and regain the confidence of the average citizen in Barbados and politics again.
And if they don't have that confidence, what?
Well, this is where then you will see that you will be finding that Barbados will continue to slip down the slippery slope, because you have lost even confidence in the government. So if you ain't got confidence in them that is running the country, automatically you ain't got no confidence in yourself. So therefore, I'm saying that legislation needs to come, but it has all the loopholes that are there need to be taken out.
Right.
And I will listen.
We're coming right back.